Welcome to a podcast on fire on the Big Heat and the combined efforts of Johnny Toe, Choi Hak, and Fatal Termination's Andrew Cam gives us what is possibly the goriest gunplay film of its time, and that is 1988's The Big Heat. And I know the term heroic bloodshed was coined a bit later than 1988 in response to A Better Tomorrow. I think Rick Baker is the one who coined it, so it might even be in the 90s when he coined that, but just to make a point, to paint a picture, think of The Big Heat as something you could dub heroic gore shit. So I'm aware of the timeline here, but I think it paints a fair picture of the next gear that these makers engaged after Better Tomorrow and things like that. But let's discuss it. I'm Ken Beyer, with me is my commentary partner and head honcho of Eastern Film Fans, Phil G. Hello, hello.
Hey, I'm back, baby. Yeah, I never went away.
How's it going over at Eastern Film Fans? Interviews galore with your partner in crime over there, or what's going on?
Jamie McDonald up there in Barney Scotland, bless him, and did some invested Lawson for the Wrath of Dracula. Trying to champion as well, we always do champion independent films, etc. and stuff. So, you know, reached out and, you know, do you want to interview him and see what he's doing? There's a bit of kung fu in there as well, so it kind of fits into what we like to do and champion that. So, yeah, we're having fun at Eastern Film Fans, as we always do. And, looking for the good stuff, throwing some what's in the boxes out and stuff of that nature. It's all good fun. So, yeah, keeping busy.
And explain to the kind kids what is that reference, what's in the box.
What's in the box, man? What's in the box? Google that one, you'll find out. But yeah, just to box opening of Blu-rays, DVDs, etc. and stuff on our YouTube channel for fun. We don't tell you what's in the box because we're crazy kids like that. You have to watch and find out and see what the what we're opening. Might not get the numbers that you want because you're not saying, hey, look, we're going to review Jackie Chan, we're going to review this. No, we're just like, what's in the box? You don't know until you turn up. That's the surprise. But yeah, we have fun with it, and that's what it's all about.
Good boys. Well, I'll link to that YouTube channel, series, and all that good stuff. But as for the podcast and its contact information, we are Podcast on Fire, part of the Podcast on Fire network. We are located at podcastonfire.com, the back catalog of this show, and all our other shows on Japanese cinema, Korean cinema, sleazy films, all located there, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. I have to remind myself not to say it, that doesn't exist anymore. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find podcasts, you'll find Podcast on Fire. Let us know what you think. Have you seen The Big Heat? podcastonfire@googlemail.com, or discuss it with us on Facebook, on X, formerly known as Twitter, and we're also on Instagram. So you'll find us as Podcast on Fire across those platforms, and the discussion group on Facebook is called Podcast on Fire Network. So join up, check us out, as we said, easternfilmfans.co.uk for Phil's and Jamie's various creative endeavors. And we also like to mention the Blu-ray boutique label Arrow 4444 have just put out Fatal Termination, starring Moon Lee, Simon Yam, Ray Loy, a little girl, and that's on Blu-ray, and that features an audio commentary by the two of us, and it's out as we record. People have been receiving it and watching it. Some have watched the commentaries. We're very grateful that you jumped on that immediately. And we got things coming up in the future for labels. I'm keeping it vague.
So it was fun to do as well, Kim. It was fun to do, I have to say, just chipping in and stuff. But you're right, we have got more to do on labels. And and for those that have tuned in or will do, enjoy. I hope you have as much fun with it as we did.
And we will link obviously to the Arrow 4444 site, but the limited edition, the various slipcover editions, they are sold out, but do expect a standard edition a little bit further down the line. They have a tendency to do that, so you haven't missed out completely, and it's quite encouraging for the label, of course, that the various editions with different slipcovers and physical extras sold out as quickly as it did. It's not like they printed 5 copies, so like, woo, we sold out. But yeah, so do expect that, and I don't expect our commentary to be yanked from a standard edition or anything. I think it's simply going to be lacking some physical extras like booklet, like the exclusive slip covers and so forth, when the standard edition does turn up. So keep an eye out on the Error 4444 website. It's on Big Cartel, but I'll link to it so you can check it out for yourselves. So we're gonna take a music break, listen to a little bit of musical goodness from The Big Heat from 1988, directed by Johnny Toe and Andrew Cam of Fatal Termination. And Choi Hak as producer is surely their not butting heads, but making sure that his vision is translated to film as well. And this particular vision equaled quite a gory one. So let's check it out and let's enter the bloodbath. So sit tight for 30 seconds or so, and we'll be right back. Welcome back in the film, up for review. This episode is The Big Heat, heroic bloodshed classic or heroic goreshed classic. Well, we'll let you know our views in a little bit, but the plot first of all. Cop Wong Wai Pong, played by Wise Lee, experiences nerve spasms in his right hand, which makes him freeze during a vital gun confrontation during a hostage situation. Choosing to write his resignation letter and instead spend time with his fiancée, Maggie, played by Betty Mack, is an idea that gets disrupted when news reaches Hong Kong that Wong's partner and friend, Tsai, has been killed in Malaysia. Material recovered from his undercover investigation reveals the criminal involvement of businessman Han Ching, played by Paul Chu of The Killer fame. He played Chow Yun-Fat's partner in The Killer. And details of a large shipment of unknown goods also leak, and they're about to be smuggled out of Hong Kong. So the mentally scarred and injured cop needs to go into action, YC Lee and friends. So we have Johnny Toe co-directing this bloody actioner, The Big Heat, with Andrew Cam, who directed Fatal Termination. And the film was also produced by Choi Hak's film workshop. And as was often the case, Choi Hak tended to engage in productions, take over production, doing uncredited directing even. And Lisa Morton's book, The Cinema of Choi Hak, analyzes the film's political commentary, which suggests Choi Hak's thought process, that his themes were present. There's a little dialogue bit about 1997 mid-film and so forth. So that's her theory. Johnny Toe was interviewed 10 years or so later down the road, saying that about the film, the production, that Choi Hak was an idea man. The script would change all the time, totally different ideas would enter the film on short notice, which is not surprising coming from Hong Kong cinema at the time. He probably didn't have a finished script before the film went into production. So Johnny Toe says that he thinks the film is good in places, but the whole thing was a bit chaotic. It suggests his quote that Andrew Cam and Johnny Toe kind of had to roll with it as dual directors working for the producer Choi Hak and his company to sort of fulfill the vision for the gory, violent piece. But I talked about this to Mike Leader on social media a while back, and he said, and he thinks, that The Big Heat doesn't sound and looks like a case of Choi Hak taking over the production, completely calling action and cut himself, but sort of dictating its content as a producer. So he didn't shove the guys out of the way, and I can kind of see that. I have my theories why I think Andrew Cam is very much present when you watch the film. Ultimately, The Big Heat was a box office disappointment, though, coming in at number 94 for the year. That's maybe a combined Western and local film list. So it came in at 94, but that doesn't mean it was in actuality number one when you take away Hollywood, you know. And it had a meager box office tally of a little over 4 million Hong Kong dollars, so... What's the theory behind that? Well, maybe because they didn't have Chow Yun-Fat, Randy Lau here. that's why people didn't go. But that's the background notes. Let's head into the short quick take review first of all. And on that note of attracting an audience, maybe it was due to, albeit a hugely competent but not superstar cast, that we got the meager numbers that the film got. But as a film, the big heat scores high for me. It may look and sound like a regular city warfare, cops and robbers, and the stylized Hong Kong action film of the 80s, that sort of thing emerges in the film. It may sound like the regular stuff, the standardized stuff, but I don't think any Hong Kong film of its kind went as hard at us with the gore. And again, not violence, not blood, but gore.
I don't think you did. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with the whole thing where it gore shed, because it is when you watch it, and it's fantastic. It doesn't overly, but there's enough there to go, oh, that's a bit gory, isn't it? That's gory heroic bloodshed. That's different take, and it is a different take.
Yeah, I mean, we see that the early stages, like frame one, they challenge us to sort of stay in our seats, I suppose. But we also, as the film rolls along, we get one of the strongest action performances by YC Lee, I think. And then what happens? Why it scores high? It this relentlessly paced and relentlessly cruel chase for the bad guys take over. We got a team of cops willing to discard the rule book, and Andrew Cam and Johnny Toe gives us gory headshots, decapitations. Kirk Wong's hand is blown off.
Yes, Kirk Wong. Yes, that Kirk Wong. Yeah, little cameo. Yeah, so if don't blink twice, but yeah, it is him. So people go, what? Is that Kirk Wong? Yes, it is.
So so they got a directing friend in there to get his hand blown off. But there's no like tonally wild stuff here. There's no comedy here. And in terms of films, if you look at Johnny Toe, I don't think he was punching this hard yet, unless he did like edgier stuff on TV or direct-to-video films, shot on video films. But at this time, he was directing comedies. Choi Hak, of course, had a versatile voice. But if you know Fatal Termination, and we certainly do, having watched it for research and commentary, the sharp tip of that means, and this is my theory, that it's possible that the new kid, Andrew Cam, is pushing the heroic bloodshed into heroic gore shed. So he's actually displaying his voice here, because the gore that we get doesn't scream like, totes Johnny Toe, totes Choi Hak.
Yeah, no.
So that's my theory. Regardless, these are the results, and I think it's a wonderfully entertaining, fast-paced, gory film. So, what's your brief view on The Big Heat, having rewatched it again?
Watching it again recently and stuff, actually, I've got more of appreciation for Wise Lee as well. But from a film point of view, it's fantastic. You know, it's one of those that deserves more credit for being up there with, you know, the great heroic bloodshed movies that, you know, we all love. It is. It's up there. I know it's a little bit more gory, but it's great because it doesn't stop. You know, I'm an action fiend, and this does not stop the action. It just rolls from next one to next one. You know, the underlying story is there. It rolls along, and you know, you get what you signed up for, which is, you know, action and a whole lot
of.
I'm
not sure you can sign up for this, though. I think, especially back in 1988, like, whoa,
yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, exactly. Which it stands out now when you look at it. It does it because it stands out of that, like, all the genre. Maybe it got lost in the genre of that at the time, you know, when there were so many of those kind of films coming out. You know, you can't, I say, like Tiger Cage, Andy Lau did a few and stuff, and you know, those kind of things were prominent at that point, and probably, like I say, got lost because, you know, it isn't no Chow Yun Fat. But actually looking at it again, there's more appreciation from Wise Lee here on what he's doing with that kind of character arc as well. So, yeah, it's a fantastic film for anybody that, you know, loves a good shoot-em-up as well.
It might make even the big boys wince a little bit. It doesn't take any prisoners, so when it comes to violence. And I was thinking about it. We did, for ourselves, I mean, we knew a little bit about the rating system in throughout Hong Kong film history, but we did a little bit of an extended piece for a thing we can't talk about, and it comes up that, you know, before 1988, when it was established in 1989, when the first local film got a category 3 rating, you know, cause for concern were there, and it was directed towards A Better Tomorrow, that was violent, it's a bad influence on the youth. And yes, it's a violent film. The shootouts are bloody. It's a John Woo film. There is bodily harm and splattery deaths. But the big heat is coming out like 2 years later. Yeah. And it seems to be downright perversely violent in comparison to Better Tomorrow. So one wonders, I don't know this, as the drive to the decision of establishing the categories, you know, 1, 2, and 3, if, you know, as the big heat came out, if that added fuel to this fire, now we need to establish categories. Look at what they're doing. You know, Better Tomorrow is child's play in some regards.
Yeah.
Versus this one. So obviously the big heat didn't get a category 3 rating. In 1989, the first local film was classified category 3, and that was a true life crime film called Sentenced to Hang, and probably category 3 for full frontal nudity for a little bit. It's not a very violent film, but that's the first. So it's really delightful for me as a sort of a lifelong gore hound that the big heat is taking bloody action films to gory action film status, takes no prisoners with body horror and gruesome deaths as the dream sequence kicks off the film with a drill going through the hand. And I think that's the point where you either have immediate walkouts or an audience like tilting their head saying, "Hello, big boy, what's going on here?"
It is, isn't it? It's just thinking about that, the whole Cat 3 film, that could have, if this had squeezed into Cat 3 and been the first Cat 3 film, everyone would have been raving about it because it would have been a point to make about this. Have you seen the first ever Cat 3 film? You know, not Sentenced to Hang, but this actually would have made a bit of a mark because, you know, it is got that goal, like you say, Sentenced to Hang hasn't got that, but this has and would have been. And actually would have given it some legs, you know, probably one of the, you know, companies would have picked it up and rolled this out now, would have seen more and got that treatment. But you know what? It is fantastic.
And you know what, Phil? I'm not sure that it actually, or when reclassified, if it actually ever got a category 3, but it sure as heck seems close. Considering the violence we get here, but you know, the drill going through the hand, which is a dream sequence, it's a pretty good little effect. It's a dummy hand, of course, but... It looks the part. I mean, that needs to burst through a rubber thing, prosthetic thing, and it doesn't look embarrassing at all on these makers. It looks rather good, actually, and it sets the tone. And then Wisely wakes up from that. So we think like, well, we've had a high point of gore. Nah. So there's a couple of feelings established here, and if we direct the discussion towards Wisely, for instance, but also Philip Kwok, who stars as one of his partners. I like to see both of them here being very natural. They are naturally talented, but Wisely Lee has a tendency to go a little bit off the rail when playing villains. But here he certainly isn't playing a villain and is a bit more human, a bit more underplayed. Like that very much. Philip Kwok was arguably, he broke out of the Venom's mold easier than his Venom's partners. Philip Kwok obviously went on to a great on-screen career, great behind-the-scenes career, and transitioned to modern action films very well. Obviously, we know him from Hardboiled, playing Mad Dog. So I think he has always been a very natural actor, and it's just kind of delightful to see him work modern action, both as actor and a co-action director of the film, as him and Wisely Lee go into that tense hostage situation near the beginning of the film. And for me, that sequence, we won't spoil all of the stuff here, but that sequence is so well put together because it doesn't go well. It doesn't go as planned. One has a medical condition and another person gets nervous. So the directors here are really creating fine tension.
Yeah, exactly. It sets the scene well, doesn't it? It sets the scene well that this is what it is. This is what's happening to him. You know, not just the visions that he has, but actually in his job that he does and clearly loves to do and stuff, this is going to be an issue. This is going to be a problem. When that going to crop up again? Well, we'll find out. But, you know, just setting the stall out and setting the scene, we know right from the start and stuff. And like I say, it's nice to say Philip Kwok and stuff because, you know, everybody I think that appreciates Hong Kong cinema appreciates him as a actor, action director, etc. He's got the quality, and you know, he does well here. But yeah, I think it sets up the film quite nicely going forward. You know, we know what we're going to expect, and that's going to crop up at some point. You're right. He underplays that enough and doesn't overplay it, which, you know, he can have a tendency to do.
Yeah, even A Better Tomorrow, which is okay, but Bullet in the Head, I always thought he was the weaker out of the three. It gets a little bit like greed, money. I hated everything before, but I like money.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why people probably would be put off, but don't be, because, you know, he's fantastic in this film.
Yeah, for sure. I've seen him in good dramatic character parts since he's in this Josephine Hsiao opera drama called Who the Men, which he's very good in. So I've always regarded him, but taking it up a notch wasn't his strong suit. So I like the underplayed Wisely. And of course, he plays Wisely in The Cat. So Wisely as Wisely.
Wisely, yeah. Hey.
That's delightful. So this, obviously he carries mental and physical worry. And having these nerve spasms that might make his job go very poorly. The hostage situation, as bloody as it is, it turns out that they managed to solve that, but certainly not as they planned it. But as you pointed out, then the movie doesn't stop. You cut to Paul Chu and the gang lures this man, which is the undercover, into a pool of petrol and sets him on fire. And you think like, okay, cool. We get the intensity in the beginning stages of the film, but that's just another example of continual intensity. And it really never fails to get me sort of enthralled that they have still creativity in them to create new cruel scenarios. And that includes that bit with the petrol, which includes also quite a nasty and admirable fire stunt for the stuntman who had to do that. So I never thought it was too much. You know what I mean? It could have been, but I never thought it was too much. I flow with it very easily and was just kind of enthralled that they're able to depict so much nastiness, really. It's mean.
Yeah, and I think, look, you know, now we're sanitized to all this. We see it that often and stuff that, you know, we kind of like, it's like, yeah, okay, that is and stuff. I think back in the day, if you watched it, you'd be like, whoa. In a younger days, you'd probably be blown away by it, but to a certain extent. But we are. That's what mainstream's done. We see these things. But you know what? It is borderline. It could have gone the other way and too much, but it doesn't. There's a fine balance there. There's a fine direction for that, the goriness and the bloodiness or the violent scenes that you have, that it doesn't overstep. There's a purpose to it as well. And the fireman's quite good and stuff, because it's like, well, how much fire, you know, could he be on fire anymore? But, you know, they don't overstretch it, which is good, because like you say, they could have gone into it, then veers more towards comical rather than, but, you know, there's a nice balance there with the violence. It works well with the action.
It's a bit meaner than, for instance, what Ringo Lam did. It certainly isn't stylized like John Woo did. And certainly it's a little bit more mean than what Kirk Wong himself did in his own films. It's so well staged and menacing, this violence, especially in that drug raid sequence that features the Kirk Wong cameo. But, you know, we all remember his hand being blown off, but we also remember this unexpected decapitation.
Yeah.
Which is so well staged and surprising, and not comical lone wolf and cub stuff. You know what I mean? It's still gritty and just surprising and even disturbing to some degree, because it has this nasty edge to it. The persons in this world are nasty people, so the violence is as a result quite nasty and menacing. So I find that very enthralling. If I were to point towards a negative thing, the movie moves fast, as we said, from action to action. When it attempts drama, it does it for such sparse spots that the women in this film certainly don't get a chance to shine. Wisely Lee's fiance is played by Betty Mack. They have one or two little dramatic scenes, but they are little dramatic scenes. And to be fair, Joey Wong is window dressing in this film.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, she always looks fantastic. It's great to see stuff, but yeah, it is just window dressing, to be honest.
playing a nurse who perhaps could be the boyfriend of the young rookie cop, and she gets in the middle of this stuff, but this is commercial casting, and they're not using her very well at all. But I wanted to say about the dramatic stuff, while they lost, they're not poorly executed dramatic beats, but they lost for such a sparse time that the drama never really has a chance. But then the movie does fine on its own to just have this action drive and drive towards more and more violence. So it's okay for me, but I don't know what you thought, if you wanted more drama, wanted more quiet sections or not, or how did you feel about that?
I was comfortable because, you know, I've got an action film, I just want to get to the action, which it does, it just, you know, jumps to that. You know, there's even a little comical sequence with Wong Ying Mung in his car and stuff, and he backs up into the, what do you call it, ticket officer thing, putting a ticket on it. It's just bizarre. It's a little bit bizarre. No place at all. And then you see Jerry Wong. There's an introduction there, and that's it and stuff. It's kind of a throwaway scene and stuff. And I think this is where we start to see where that, and we, you know, we hinted upon that direction that happened between, you know, there was obviously Andrew Cameron and Johnny Toe and Choi Hart there as well. That's starting to, you could see now you understand it a little bit more, that there's fragments of this that was kind of slightly different. It's kind of well hidden because it's still a great film end to end. But when you understand that, when you analyze and look at the film, you go, actually, I can see now where bits and pieces may have been slightly different or going different ways, or those drama or dramatic beats might have been there. What we have is great and appreciated, but yeah, you can start to see that somehow.
Yeah, Hong Kong films sometimes were created all in editing, just because there was no script, there was no sync sound dialogue being recorded. So I remember Michelle Yeoh saying that about, for instance, Yes, Madam, that I had no idea really what was going on here, because there was no script. I couldn't read Chinese anyway, so yeah, it wouldn't have helped. So it's more like, that's what I was looking for. That's the motivation of my character. And then that's true for so many action films. Not that this is a poor production or anything, no, not at all. It's a skilled production. And as I said, we don't want to do all the gory highlights, but one of the sort of last, like, full highlights I wanted to detail is where the film could have gone into comical overkill, but it's still exciting. There's a gunfight and foot chase 30-40 minutes in. Wisi Lee and the rookie cop are involved. That ends amidst traffic, and it ends with Wisi Lee shooting the one he's chasing multiple times in the leg and foot.
Yeah.
The guy falls down mid-traffic, gets thrown off the highway, onto the bonnet of another car, lands in a splattery fashion, is run over. More splattery stuff as he's thrown to the side of the road. And it sounds like comical overkill, but I just think it's so cool, this gory edge that the film has decided on. And also, to be honest, if you think about that sequence, it's executed well enough through tricks and editing and stunts and special effects. So I wanted to mention that, because it's like, the guy's down now. Oh, no, he's not. He's kind of dead now, but he's going to be deader, dead plus.
That is full on, but even at the beginning of that and stuff, there's, like, you know, one of the kids saves the kid, doesn't he, and stuff, and the car comes towards him and they almost runs him over. Even that's a little, so you're like, oh, catch your breath. And then it still goes on because he's, like, chasing this guy on the bridge and stuff, and it's still going on, this sequence. You know, he's on top of cars, he's shooting at him, you know, it's all going on. You don't catch your breath until the final, literally, they're looking at the body at the floor and stuff, and you're going, oh my God, what a sequence. It's a fantastic sequence.
Yeah, that's not a common sight. That's why I don't feel desensitized. So, like, I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah.
Not at all. I think this stands out. The stunt coordinators did a smashing job. I wanted to mention, outside of Philip Kwok being the action choreographer, we got Joe Chu and I believe the former at this point, Jackie Chan stunt member Paul Wong, who was also the co-action director on Fatal Termination. So we got a knowledgeable group here. I said we weren't going to mention the gory highlights, but I still think we should mention the attack on the witness in the hospital. I think is it's a big set piece because it ends in an elevator shaft, but it's it ranks high in tension and execution and ruthless edge, and it also puts nurses and kids in harm's way. A kid dies here. A kid in a wheelchair is shot twice in the chest. So I'm thinking like, is this you, Andrew Cam? Are you killing kids here? Because I know you did it in that other film.
Yeah. I've done it again.
They didn't squib up the kid this time, but it's a surprising thing when the nurse is shot and you see the kid has two gun wounds and it's in a wheelchair, the kid. That's why. I mean, it's disturbing, but it made me laugh. Like, no, Hong Kong cinema having no sort of nostalgia and fondness for the angelic ones in this society. Nah. They're canon fodder as well.
Filter. And that's what makes this great, because I always said, look, this is why Hong Kong cinema is exciting. This is why it always has been and always will be for me, because I'm always finding films I've not seen, which is fantastic, is those sequences and sequences like that, because you just don't know who's going to get it. And they don't care. You know, and I've said it before and I'll say it again. I've gone into an Andy Lau film and Andy Lau doesn't come out the other side. I don't know why that is. If it was a Tom Cruise film, he's going to be at the end of the picture. Andy Lau, there's no necessarily going to happen. And it's the same for any supporting cast or anybody in any scene and stuff. Kids and all, you do not know whether they're going to survive that scene or so. And that is fantastic, because they don't play by the rules, and I love that.
It wasn't commercial suicide for Andy Lau to die like half a dozen times across films in 2 years, you know, which is great.
But yeah, that scene's fantastic. Like I say, we don't deconstruct it too much, but again, finishing the elevator. So it's fantastic. Again, another fantastic. It just makes this film so watchable and rewatchable.
Blinken, you'll miss him, kind of. Robin Shu is here.
Yeah, playing
one of the assassins that are sent to the hospital, and he obviously is in fatal termination. He got more meteor roles. I don't think he has dialogue here, but he certainly has that very mean face, very distinctive, very handsome face that suited Hong Kong cinema so well for all that edge. And you know, the elevator shaft is. It's actually so fucking great, to be honest, because they're really up the danger. We understand the danger of this cramped environment. And when people are actually shot and fall down the elevator shaft, they obviously hit the beams going down, which is a disturbing sight, to be honest. It's like ding, 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 and they go down. And the only thing I won't spoil is another sort of gory highlight that the movie has in mind, and they execute, you know, body horror, really.
Yeah.
Separation. Yeah. Body separation. And I don't know, man, it doesn't scream Hong Kong cinema necessarily, or rather Hong Kong action cinema, like In the Wake of a Better Tomorrow, we got the blah blah blah, more films of blah blah blah, shooting splatter splatter. No, this is thinking on its feet and planning to be mean as long as the censors allow us to be mean.
Mm.
And it seems like a lot was allowed here, because it's not a movie that seems censored all over the place. So the elevator shaft confrontation, which is lit in blue as well, and one party has night vision goggles at one point. So I don't know, man. It's the mean and nastiness is fun. A movie like On the Run has mean and nasty characters and mean and nasty violence and isn't fun. So, you know, you have that contrast to how Hong Kong cinema navigated the end of the 80s, you know. So it's just great.
Yeah, I think it's one of those secrets, and I come back to it later, and it did the lighting of it as well. It's special. You know, I've seen some things lifted from Hong Kong cinema and stuff. Stallone did it from Police Story on numerous occasions. You know, I think the elevator shaft, somebody should nick that and do that Hollywood style, because it's fantastic. I'm surprised nobody has. It's a fantastic sequence.
Speaking of the women again, I mean, again, Joey Wong as the nurse is clearly window dressing. But Betty Mac for a while has some decently underplayed scenes with Wise Lee. For instance, he can't be all lovey-dovey in front of the guy, so they have a little separate downtrodden discussion between themselves about how the marriage is going, but she is unfortunately not very fleshed out and not a great part of the film either. And you know, the directors, in the minute that they have, or given, is given by Choi Hak to do drama, they're staging the film well enough, but it's too short to be emotionally engaging and draining. So it's a little bit of a trade, I suppose. You do. Do you want the gore shed, or do you want the tears?
That's it. Yeah. It's one of those films where, you know, not everybody's gonna make it to the end. I think Ken Boyle does. He's back on screen. Yeah, but not everybody will. And you're gonna be invested in some, and others, you know, are not gonna be fleshed out as much and invest in as much. But that's just the way the cookie crumbles.
The drive that the movie has is good enough for us, obviously, yeah, because it's so exciting. Like, the villains have unlimited resources to go in and fuck shit up, go into hospitals and hire assassins. And for a while, the CID, they're losing. Mm-hmm. So, which is a latter beat I really like, that it's not working. Philip Kwok is thinking of... that he has to leave this because it's not working. We're losing. And YC-Lee's health is deteriorating, as the various sequences show. His nerves are acting up. So I do like that it's frustrating, the violence. So that dramatic component worked for me, you know.
Yeah, and I think that's it. That underpins it. We said that at the start, didn't we? And that really is, because if you took that away, you take away a sense of the film and stuff, because it has got that dramatic, that beat and stuff, that, you know, he's struggling with that. And that helps, because you've got something, you've always got that in the back of your mind that's there and stuff, and he's dealing with it. And that's enough for this. That's enough. You didn't need to do anything more. Well, you could have done, and you know, but for what it is and what it delivers, that was enough for it to give it the dramatic punch it needed.
When doing drama between the men, I think it works a little bit better.
Yeah.
To be honest, and it's a little bit of a shame as well, considering that neither Joey Wong and Betty Mack are poor actresses. They're both good actresses. I'm not particularly familiar with her, but certainly with Joey Wong. She was a game actress, a very abused actress in fiction, in a fictional sense, in these 80s movies, but always came to bat. But there's nothing really here to swing at, to be honest, for her. It is eye candy, not sexualized eye candy, obviously, but it really is an undercooked role, which is a shame, because I know she could take part to a degree in meaner stuff. So yeah, it's for Joey Wong fans, I wouldn't blame you for being disappointed in how they feature her. So some of my last notes here, just random notes. Some of the squibs towards the end aren't cups, they are buckets. The blood is just shooting out of people towards the end, like, yeehaw.
Yeah, good. I like it, yeah.
And I like Philip Kwok's, he is banged up towards the end, you know. He is shot and then comes back and then is immediately blown out of a window. You know, when the apartment yeah, blows up, true. So it's like he's made of harder stuff. And my final note, really, the late breaking villain that is armed to the teeth, that's the bit that was laughable. And how he goes up in a cartoon fashion.
Yeah.
It's a slight complaint, but the movie hasn't even hinted at that. And it's not a good thing either that we got a late breaking villain towards the end in a really enthralling sequence as well, with the trucks and sort of a primal violence. But yeah, didn't expect that geek to come back to be our villain, to be honest.
I suppose you could say that, because the end sequence, you know, expect more and you get that, and it's not quite, you know, it doesn't live up to what everything else is. But I think the genius of, or the ingenuity of, the actual scene itself, I think, was quite clever on how he did that, because obviously you start with his issue, you end with the issue, and he's got round in a inventive way, and I kind of like that, and you're right, and there's plenty of bullet holes to be had, so, you know, it rounds it off quite.
It's a very, like, Tom and Jerry, like, aftermath, after that villain kind of blows up. And when the smoke clears, you see, like, soot all over his body, I suppose. But, yeah, it's I still like it all. It's a wild film. I call it disturbing and distressing at points. I'm sure you'll find the violence fun, but I'm sure you'll find that this violence was not common in Hong Kong films. You might see a sequence or two, like a Johnny Wang film or something, but I don't know, man. No, I can't think of many movies that had this momentum and had so many ideas and managed to kind of top themselves throughout the film, rather than having one sort of highlight reference sequence. So it makes it special, really.
It does make it special. It's one of those that people should hunt down and watch. If you're fans of heroic bloodshed, you're fans of gore, then you'll be fans of heroic goreshed.
And if you've stumbled upon a film called, if you want to look elsewhere, I remember seeing a Taiwanese film with Emily Chu from A Better Tomorrow, playing Leslie Cheung's wife in that movie called The Dignified Killers. Had a couple of sequences where people, you know, their hands are blown off and they're holding their bloody limbs and blood goes spurt, spurt, spurt. And I don't know, man, I like when they take this step. And Taiwan did it as well, you know. So The Dignified Killers is a little bonus watch you can look up. There are good things out there to examine outside of the big heat. But start here if you want to see heroic gore shed, I suppose. So if you started with Fatal Termination, this is a good place to go back if you want to see what Andrew Kam did in co-directing fashion. And I'm still convinced that this is some of his instincts coming out on the screen. But since we don't have access to him, that's only a theory. But the movies are the movies, you know. The movies have the stuff. So there's no reason to complain, really. Yeah. Okay, okay. As for availability of The Big Heat, it was pretty extensively represented on Hong Kong Video back in the day, ranging from a letterboxed subtitled Laserdisc to budget DVD releases from Delta Mac and Joy sales. These discs seem elusive secondhand, and there's no high-definition disc release in sight currently. There are HD screenshots suggesting that a TV or on-demand release is doing the rounds in Asia, whether in China or elsewhere, so we can just hope for the gore shed to get into wider circulation in Asia again. But I wanted to end with this, because this is a Cinema City film, there is a chance that it won't get into wider circulation again. And I'll explain, and I want to quote a forum post by a person whose name I didn't jot down when I found this text, but this is a bit depressing. The conceit is that we might not get a global release of this, you know. There might never be a US or UK release. So, to quote, Golden Princess was transformed into a real estate company at one point, Kowloon Development. They sold off the Asian rights to the majority of their movie catalog to Star TV / Fortune Star and part of it to Maya Entertainment. The international rights, however, stayed with them. This includes the entire Cinema City library, that would include City on Fire, Better Tomorrow, and so forth, and Kowloon Development no longer being about film licensing. It's not interested in licensing out single movies to different companies around the world. What they are looking for is a company that buys all the international rights in one package. But this package is supposed to cost several million dollars because of its size. You know, there are hundreds of movies and TV programs in there. So it would take at least a mini major who could afford this investment. And they would not only buy well-known titles, sellable around the world, but also tons of material only suitable for Asian or even only Cantonese audiences, you know, comedies and dramas. So up until now, no one is willing to take the risks and make the deal, which is the reason why the Golden Princess catalog, the Cinema City films, stays legally unavailable outside of Asia. So we can only hope for a Hong Kong Blu-ray, and hopefully a good sounding one, and not with a terrible remix or anything. But don't expect a boutique label, big old deluxe edition of The Big Heat. That's the depressing state, and that's going to apply at least at the time of recording to City on Fire and A Better Tomorrow and things like that. But it's a big ask, Phil. Like, you wanna put out the Better Tomorrow trilogy on the deluxe Blu-ray or 4K? We'll have all the other stuff as well, and give us the millions and millions of dollars right now, please. And thank you.
Unless I win the lottery and the Powerball one, then
exactly.
Yeah, not even the lottery.
Phil will pay for it, guys.
Damn, yeah.
I didn't know all of this, to be honest, until a little while ago, that that's the international limbo we find ourselves in with these titles that people are asking for. We get a lot of stuff, of course, and stuff from Fortune Star, but when it comes to, like, Better Tomorrow, City on Fire, Chinese Ghost Story, that's the hurdle we are going to run into when it comes to being released in the US over UK. There are German DVD and Blu-ray releases of these films, but as far as I know, they are not licensed. And they might not even be HD, to be honest. They might be upscales. So that's the depressing part of it, but hope for a Hong Kong release of it, so we at least can get a bare bonus thing in HD. But for the moment, we have our standard definition DVD that we watch for this viewing, and it's certainly not unwatchable, at least not in my eyes. Anyway, let's conclude this. We'll be back in the future, of course, examining Hong Kong filmmakers throughout the years, unplugging gaps in a variety of filmographies, in this case Choi Hak, Johnny To, and even Andrew Kam. So their coverage of big and even smaller movies of theirs that led up to the bigger movies that they get a coverage, a little slice of coverage on the podcast on Fire Network, that's important to me. And I think The Big Heat is something that people are aware of, a movie that people are aware of, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion. So let us know. podcastonfire.com, social media links are there, back catalog of Podcast on Fire and all our other shows. Look for us on X, formerly Twitter, Facebook. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you find podcasts. And check out us on Blu-ray disc, for instance, on the Arrow 4444 edition of Fatal Termination. But we've done a variety of commentaries for 88 films, and we have stuff coming up in the future as well. So for instance, you and I didn't do this commentary, but the inaugural release from Neon Eagle Video of the Taiwanese Rape Revenge Nasty Kill Butterfly Kill featured an audio commentary by me and Paul Fox talking of that film, how IFD changed it, and its history and Taiwanese film history. So do check that out as well. But me and Phil, we are busy behind the scenes as always, so follow us on social media and follow those updates. When the reveal is ready, I'm sure you'll be excited. So thanks if you have picked up any disc that we've been on in the past. If you want to plug the website, please do.
EasternFilmFans.co.uk, also available on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube. So Threads. There's one called Threads, Ken. Yeah, it's a bit like Twitter. In fact, it's exactly like Twitter. In fact, they could call it Twitter now. It's not Twitter, it's X. And you can have Threads. But yeah, a lot of people on there. Check it out, Threads. And yeah, that's us. Go and check us out. Say hello, and we'll say hello back, because we're nice like that.
I'll only come on Threads if I can discuss the BBC TV movie Threads about when the nuclear bomb was dropped on Sheffield. That's the only thing I want to discuss on Threads, really.
One post
then. Yep, exactly. Cool. I like Fred's. So, yeah. See you guys. So, speaking of that, thank you very much for listening for this to this discussion on The Big Heat, and we'll be back in the future. So, I've been Kenny B, and with me was my podcast partner and commentary booth partner, Phil G.
Stay safe and be well.